come on in. The water's fine, we're gonna have a grand old time. Give it a listen, it's gonna be a blast. It's Kristen's Anthropology Podcast for Chelsea Dyer.
Hi, my name is Kristen Wingfield, and you are listening to my Anthropology Final, a look at transnational adoption and methods of success in the form of a podcast. I have chosen this topic for a plethora of reasons. The first and most prevalent is the presence of transnational adoption in my family. Two of my cousins, who I'll be protecting the identities of throughout this podcast, were adopted by my aunt and uncle 9 years ago, about, from an orphanage in Ukraine as young teens. This geographical and cultural transition was one that our whole family experienced, and a successful one. Seeing this transition from the outside can only give one real perspective, and really the only one I'll ever fully understand, mine. But I've always been curious. What made this transition so successful, and how can so many hundreds of thousands of other adoptions be so successful from culture to culture as well? So I've decided to keep things relatively close to home, and I've interviewed my two cousins and their two loving parents, my aunt and uncle. Of course, one cannot simply interview and expect to call the study well-rounded, so even though we are in a pandemic, I've attempted to keep this project thorough in the simplest ways. After much looking and only finding quite surface-level peer-reviewed anthropological articles on adoption, I did find two that mostly fit the bill. The first article I read was Anthropology in Adoption by John Terrell and Judith Modell. This reading focused on not only a history of anthropological studies on adoption, but the various views on adoption and interpreted methods of success within adoption. Reading this actually steered me away from my original topic of choice, gender and how it relates to adoption, and towards the question, what does it take to succeed after being adopted and before? Or what does it take to have a successful adoption? The author says that a glance over the abundant published literature on kinship in fact suggests that studying adoption generally plays a peripheral role in anthropology as a way of illuminating a kinship system as a mechanism of social mobility or as a way of transmitting property. End quote. This article dove into so many cultural differences in the view of adoption and kinship, like many that I found, and contrasted it to common Western ideas. Open quote, although Western ideas about kinship and adoption assume the primacy of blood ties and biological inheritance, and see people as discrete and bounded individuals, Lenikin and Poyer, 1990. Anthropologists know that these presumptions are not universal. Pomponio, for example, notes that while children on Mandauk Island, Papua New Guinea, are thought to share the substance of their parents and other kin, substance meaning more than it does in Western thought, not just shared biogenetic endowment, but the combination of blood, food, and work. Open quote within quote, the transubstantial nature of Mandauk personhood is evidenced by their belief that firstborns can be created through adoption, and adoption is not limited to married couples. End quote. Many children, in fact, are adopted specifically for this purpose, she concludes. The important substance here is not contained in blood or semen, but food and work. By feeding and caring for a child, the substance of the adult is transferred to that child. Much like this excerpt, most anthropological studies I have found all center themselves on a topic that I personally find to be quite surface level, the definition of family and who accepts what a family is. What intrigues me more are cultural differences in success and what transnational adoption, almost always moving a child from one culture to another, asks of the adopted individual. What it takes for a family or child to succeed before and after an adoption. The writing even talks about how little attention has been paid to the ways people think about and react to the meaning of adoption. I wanted to find something focused on those who are adopted. Intercultural success for the children involved, for the families involved, and not just the larger cultural view of what success is. I do understand that anthropology, especially cultural anthropology, the focus of this class, tends to be quite broader. But I do think that adoptive families are a culture in themselves, and I'm very curious to figure out what they think success is. For my second anthropological source, I read Adoption Across Cultures by Nancy E. Riley and Krista E. Van Fleet. Immediately, a quote stuck out to me. Adoption tends to occur along a deferential gradient of power within any given society. Children tend to move from the care of 16, making families through adoption, those with less status and power to the care of those with more status and power. Local political, economic relationships, and social relationships are thus crucial to understanding adoption, but local arenas are always embedded in broader sets of relationships, including a global balance of power. End quote. This really popped out to me, and I think it's very valuable as this reading focuses on what adoption means, but in a different way than my first reading. While the first one focused on the definition of adoption and what is considered a full family, this talked about what people thought happened through adoption, if this makes sense, where power goes. We've talked in our class about so many different forms of power and where many different historians consider power to be, and this is kind of touching on that subject, so I found it a bit interesting. But I'm still curious as to how a family experiencing an overlap of cultures adjusts to changes and how adoptive individuals view and experience power. This article details differences in the legality of adoptions and the moral views across different continents, whether or not biological parents truly have rights over their children, if biological and adoptive parents should be in touch, and whether or not they connect. Whatever the study was, a look at, I hope I say this correctly, the Tambo adoption, or Peru's code of children and adolescents, or West Africa child circulation, all anthropological studies within this reading discuss predominantly legal subjects. I assume that an anthropological view of family dynamics would be difficult, as it may fall into a much more micro level, as I said, but I'm more interested in the changes and adaptions one must make during a transnational, transcultural adoption. One of the biggest observations I've made so far is that this just has not been looked into as much as I thought it would have been. So, after reading these and taking in all the informational soup that I could, I got ready for my interviews. Before conducting my interviews, I had a hypothesis that in order for a transnational and transcultural shift to be successful, the adopted population has to completely shift their moral and ethical standards, views, and behaviors. Something seemingly fairly simple, but something I was eager to hear more about. The format that I'll be discussing my interviews is first with the two adopted individuals, my male and female cousin, and the three questions I asked. Before interviewing them, I disclosed the purpose of this study, who would be hearing the interviews, and what they did not have to, and that they did not have to share anything they felt uncomfortable with in the slightest. Despite these measures, I did run into some ethical dilemmas. We'll discuss that later. The first question I asked was quite broad. What do you think it took to succeed in Ukraine? I will first be playing you my female cousin's answer, then my male cousin's answer.
If you want to succeed and be on top, you have to like either physically fight or like verbally fight, or in a job wise, you have to project compete, pretty much. Like,
what does that mean?
It means like you will bring somebody down, like on purpose, like mess them up so you can be on top. Like if they are about to win the like some sort of like nomination for like they will bring them down by screwing their like project up or whatever they have.
And now my male cousin's response.
Definitely being the tough one. You know, like you live with other people, mainly, I mean, other boys. You definitely got to be both physically and mentally tough. Mm-hmm. And for me, I was always kind of like a teacher's pet, I guess. So I would always get on the good side from the teachers. And like, they would always give me extra stuff, they always look after me.
While I could immediately summarize what you just heard from both of my cousins, I would like you first to also hear their answers to my second question. What do you think it took for you to succeed in America? I'll once again be playing my female cousin's answer first, and my male cousin's answer secondly.
I think in America, you have to have a good personality, you have to be likable, and be yourself, I guess.
Would you say that what it takes to succeed in Ukraine and America are similar or different, and in what ways?
A little bit different, because in America, you have to have a great personality and skill. But in Ukraine, it's all about skill. They don't care about if you're smiling a lot. If you're smiling a lot, you look stupid there. That's why people wouldn't like you.
Why is it, so is smiling like?
It's because of the culture, because Ukrainian and Russian culture, they basically show that, like, we are the boss. We show no emotions. We have no sympathy, no nothing. In America, you actually have feelings. You actually show your feelings and your emotions to your coworkers or to your boss to, like, be able to be heard, and that's how you can succeed more.
And now my male cousin's response.
Family is number one thing. They push you, they make you realize something about yourself that you wouldn't have realized it, I guess. And it's, I don't know, just like having a structure in life, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I mean, knowing mom and dad, you know, they always made sure that I did well in school. I tried my best, and it's always having somebody in your corner to look after you and tell you how great you are, kind of like build you up.
My two cousins were so gracious in sharing their experiences with me. While they did share more than just these clips, I wanted to keep my chosen soundbites as succinct as possible for the sake of time, so that you don't find yourself listening to 2 hours of a student's podcast. Gathering from my readings and the interviews with my cousins, the biggest similarities in their answers were A, their success in Ukraine being centered around being tough, resilient, and strong, and self-preservation, and B, their success after adoption being centered around having to be more open and compliant, and but also having a support system to help them navigate. So far, this supported my original hypothesis and preconceived ideas, but in order to gain a more in-depth interview, I asked them one more question. What was your transition like? Here are their answers.
Honestly, I don't remember. I guess people who surrounded me helped, like my parents, my, like, family members, cousins, parents.
My cousin and I then had a short discussion about the difficulties with her transition. And out of respect for her, although she has consented, I'd like to keep them private. Here are my male cousin's responses to this question.
I don't know. It's like, I feel like everything comes into play, because language, you know, like all the different things. But I feel like I was able to get acclimated pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very extroverted, and I just kind of clicked with the family. And I like the rules personally, because when I moved here, there were a lot of new rules to learn and follow, which is, I was pretty good at that. So it wasn't difficult.
After hearing about each of my cousins' transitions, I had to face a larger cultural shift than just values. It was now a shift in actions and environment on top of morals and values. For my cousins at least, they both discussed a shift from an environment with cultural rules and a need to be tough and have fighting skills to stay afloat to, I would argue, an equally tough environment, facing a nuclear family and having, as my cousin said, to learn how to smile. My cousins later discussed with me the differences in their experiences separately. I've decided not to include soundbites from this section, as I do not feel that either could truly consent what the other had to say about their experience. From this interview, I will summarize that my female cousin discussed that her own experience with adoption and success was fairly difficult. She communicated that she had a harder time learning how to love and show affection, and this interfered with her both learning and connecting with her family originally. My male cousin described his own experience differently, sharing that his transition felt smooth and that because he's fairly extroverted, he had an easy time connecting with new friends and family, and an easier time learning as a result. I'm happy to report that, of course, they're both doing extraordinarily well nowadays, and our family is a loving and strong unit. What I can pull is a micro difference in success here that relies on more personal factors in combination with an adjustment of values, more complicated and dynamic than my original thought process on the topic. The next interviews that I conducted are from my aunt and uncle. And here's where we get into that lovely ethical dilemma I mentioned before, and touched just a bit with when talking about my cousins. As I recorded and listened to my aunt's description of her experiences with my cousins in the adoption process, I had to ask myself, can one truly consent to another individual sharing personal information about them? The short answer I concluded for now, and at least with the parameters I set up, is not really. So for this reason, the soundbites I will be including from here on out will be fairly concise and broad in an attempt to stay ethical. I feel that most important anthropological data is from my cousins themselves, but I was curious to see if the parental view here differed. I asked the same three questions but modified them for a parental perspective. The soundbites you hear might be a little bit choppy or short, but once again, this is just an effort to keep my cousins' personal information as private as possible. My first question was, what do you think it took for your child to succeed in Ukraine? Here's my uncle's answer first.
Okay, so for them to succeed in Ukraine, so Ukraine is a much different place than the U.S. A lot of people would classify Ukraine as a third country, you know, third world country. They don't have a lot of the amenities that a country like the U.S. has. A little, you know, poorer, dirtier. So for our kids to succeed in Ukraine, it was really, I think, for them, and it's complicated, but in general, I think folks in Ukraine have to work harder. I think the tricky thing for my kids also is that they were orphans. So for them, I think when they were growing up, that was just life. The hardness of kind of living in Ukraine was just life to them. They didn't think twice about it. I think they had to have a lot of resilience because of the fact that they grew up as a ward of the state, essentially, for a majority of their childhood. And so they pretty much, I think, didn't have to get too attached to a lot of different things. I think they kind of rolled with the punches, you know. They learned to live with a lot of disappointment, you know? I mean, and...
That was my uncle. And next, here is my aunt's response in a few short clips.
They literally grew up in an environment where you needed to lie, cheat, and steal to be successful. They needed to be fierce. They needed to be good physical fighters. They needed to be brave. They needed to have very good control of their emotions. They needed to have a really strong tolerance for being uncomfortable, really strong patience, very few emotional needs. They needed to kind of play the game of figuring out who to have in your corner. You needed strong friends.
It was so interesting for me as a listener to hear a more macro look of things from my uncle and a more micro look from my aunt. While both track very similarly with the answers from each of my cousins previously, my uncle's response took into consideration the environment his children lived in and the impact that being a ward of the state in this particular country would have on their experiences. This was yet another larger additive to the picture I was getting, and added another dynamic. And before pulling any conclusions, here are the answers to the second question. What do you think it took for your children to succeed in America? Here are their answers.
Yeah, so it's interesting. I think for them to succeed here in the U.S., in America, a lot of what they, I think, developed at the orphanage helps them. Thinking specifically of like being resilient and having, you know, a good backbone and being strong and being able to persevere through different types of adversity helps them a lot. And so when they get knocked down here, I do think they're able to roll with the punches for the most part. Now, of course, there are disappointments that pop up from time to time, but when something bad happens, you know, that we've been able to kind of have conversations about what happened and, I don't know, cry, lament what happened, you know, but and learn from what happened, but been able to kind of learn from it and just kind of keep going. So, I mean, I think that mentality of like, hey, here was something that bad that happened or it didn't go the way I wanted it to. We're gonna keep trying. You know, this is just their life. This is how they've grown up. So I think that's helping them, and I think we'll continue to help them here in America.
And now for my aunt's response to the same question.
Academic success is really valued in America, and especially in the sort of upper middle class world that we brought them into. So academic success, they had to learn that mattered. All those things. I think, like I said, integrity, honesty, self-control, respect, following the rules, kind of staying within the lines.
Here we get to see this really interesting duality of learning and using and in some ways benefiting from your previous norm, your previous morals here, being resilient and strong in the face of adversity, while and using it to get used to a new set of norms and a new cultural reality. And this is an overlapping that I also neglected to think about in my original hypothesis of just completely changing. Here we see that it's more. It's using where you've come from and the strengths you've learned to get used to your new norm, your new morals. And while this may not be the reality for everyone else, of course, I've only interviewed this one small family, but I am getting a bigger picture here than I originally thought. And using this more anthropological method, I'm getting a more real and in-depth picture than I would had I just looked into articles and data and statistics online. I did ask them each one more question about the transition in their families from each culture, but after listening to each, I've decided that they're a bit too personal to use here. As once again, like I said before, I don't think that after learning about anthropological ethics and values, that I could truly share them while respecting the consent and identities of my cousins. From these conversations and answers, I have been, needless to say, completely blown away with how simple my original thought was. The articles I read presented the surprisingly legal and matter-of-fact view on different cultural adoptions from outside perspectives and definitions. And I have to say, I don't think adoption in its transition is as simple as any anthropologist could possibly put into words. While my interview can only speak to one experience, it does open up the possibility of other adoption transitions looking similar. I do have to bring up that unlike many adoptions that take place at birth, this example took place at a much less common occurrence of adoption at the young teenage. And this adds a lot more variables to the attempt at observing success. I must also keep in mind the relativity of success and be cautious to not view success as an ethnocentric matter. However, I do think I did an okay job at allowing those I was interviewing to define success and succeeding themselves. What I have found is that success through adoption is so dynamic. It pulls in personal factors and traits like extroversion and introversion, emotional trauma and experience, family and class that you're being welcomed into, all the cultures that are intertwining, and so much more. While I'm looking at success, I do think I did get things partially right. There is a transition of ethics and morals that takes place. It's just not nearly as dualistic as I originally expressed. Using the anthropological method of interview has given me, as I said, a more in-depth look at something that someone could try to explain and conclude by simply looking up statistics about different definitions of success. I did have a hard time resisting steering the conversations where I was instinctually hoping they would go, and I can completely see how tedious and complicated informed consent can be, and unbiased views, and how hard they are to achieve, and I'm still not sure that being completely unbiased exists. Looking back, I wonder many things. Did my own experiences with foster care affect my hypothesis? Did I do my part ethically in this project? Could I have asked less biased questions or conducted the interviews better? Is my project way too long for my teacher to still be listening at this point? I can say that I have so much respect for her podcast recordings now. There's no going back now, but I'm so thankful and glad to have had this experience and to have conducted my project the way that I have, because of what I learned. It was also nice to have an excuse to catch up with my cousins. If you're still here, Chelsea, I hope you enjoyed this anthropology podcast. I can't thank you enough for being such an understanding, involved, and kind teacher. You taught us this class online during a pandemic with a baby, and I cannot tell you how strong you are and how proud you should be of that. I know the whole class has loved learning with you. To end things off, here are some versions of the intro song that I decided not to use.
Come on in, the water's fine, we're gonna have a grand old time. Give it a listen, it's gonna be a blast, it's Chris's Anthropology Podcast.
Oh, this is for you, yeah!
Come on in, the water's fine, we're gonna have a grand old time. Give it a listen, it's gonna be a blast, it's Chris's Anthropology Podcast.
Come on in, the water's fine, we're gonna have a grand old time. Give it a listen, it's gonna be a blast, it's Chris's Anthropology Podcast. For Chelsea Dyer.